Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. What makes you pick a certain dress or shirt, coat or tie on any given morning when you prepare for the day ahead? Is there a story embedded inside the threads, the seams, the soles, or the sleeves that suggests Monday morning or Friday night, or maybe never again, but never thrown away? Either. That's what we're talking about today, the stories in our clothes. Best-selling author Emily Spivak has pulled together a collection of stories, memories from clothes about New York in her new book, Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City. She joins us now by phone. Welcome, Emily Spivak.
Thanks so much for having me.
You wrote in your introduction that you learn a lot from what people wear, and that could be a lot about them as individuals, but you've collected 68 stories about what people wear in New York and what that says about the city. What distinguishes New York as a city of clothes?
Well, I think it's really about the way that we wear clothes in New York and the way the city has its way on us when we wear clothes in New York. So we wear our clothes hard. We walk outside and a bus splashes on us or an air conditioner drips from overhead. We wear down our shoes. We're pounding the pavement. We're running around. New York has its way with us and our clothing. We can walk outside feeling like we look like $1 million and then, you know, someone steps on our shoes on the subway or something. We are exposed in a different way in New York. And also, I think there's something about how it really feels like we're in some ways on display or on a runway in New York, just when we're walking down the street or when we're on the subway. We're exposed in a different way. It's far less of a car culture. So that's what I had in mind when I decided to focus on New York as a city to delve into the stories connected to clothing.
I was touched by how vulnerable people were willing to become in telling their stories.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I think that there is something about an article of clothing as a storytelling device that really gets people to open up. There's something about the fact that frequently people haven't been asked to tell a story connected to a piece of clothing. I think that there's an intimacy with clothing that gets people to just delve deeper into things that they may not have shared, just as a sort of, as the garment may have been hidden in the back of their closet, the memory is kind of hidden in the back of their head, perhaps, and they just haven't been asked to share it. And so on the one hand, it's something very accessible, but then you can really begin to connect with someone rather quickly via that garment. And also, I think...
Go ahead.
Well, we all have clothing, and so there's something both accessible about it, but then those stories are hidden. So it's an opportunity to tap into those stories.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking the clothes that we wear and the ones with memories, the ones we keep even when they don't fit anymore, maybe, or maybe when they're too threadbare to wear. My guest is Emily Spivak. She is the author of a new book. It's entitled Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Is there a story in a piece of clothing you own that you'll never get rid of because of that story, and maybe you've never told it before? Give us a call. Tell us your story, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. How did you settle on 68 stories, Emily Spivak?
Well, I interviewed quite a few people, and I wanted to give readers the best stories that I had collected. And so it's an assortment of stories. I also just didn't want to overwhelm the reader, but I wanted to feel like it was enough of a cross-section to really give you a sense of the city, different neighborhoods in the city, different moments in time in the city, different professions, people doing different things. There was also just no way that I would paint a comprehensive picture of this city, but I hoped that I could, you know, have little anecdotes that would combined give a sense of New York City.
There are some pretty famous people in there, certainly well-known people and people about town in New York City. But then there's just ordinary people that we may never otherwise hear of again. How did you come across them?
The process of gathering stories for Warren in New York and for my first book, Warren Stories, was relatively similar, where I cast a very wide net. And I would begin by asking friends and friends of friends, send out a big email blast, post on different listservs. But then I would do things like post on Craigslist and just see what kinds of responses and what kinds of stories I would get. And I got some of the most incredible stories from people responding to a Craigslist ad. So I would post all over, and it would really just try to get into the most diverse pockets of the city. And that's how these stories came together. I also just wanted to really have, people whose names you would recognize and then really surprise you with some absolutely wonderful stories from people whose names you may not recognize, but who've done some significant things or who just have an incredible story to share.
When you would ask them this, maybe someone famous, maybe Lena Dunham or someone like that, when you ask her, did she have to think for a minute? Or did she know automatically?
Frequently, the people who said yes and who wanted to participate in this project had something in mind. It was like I asked them the question, and the garment was just had been sitting there, perhaps waiting for that story to be told. Occasionally I would meet up with someone or get on the phone. Was interviewing someone, and they might have a couple of different objects that they'd want, a couple of different garments they'd want to share their story about. And then we would discuss them and decide which might be best for the book. But frequently, people had something in mind that I think is partially because they are familiar with my first book, with Warren Stories. Mm-hmm. So they had an idea that, okay, there's a connection between clothing and story or clothing and memory. And frequently, it's just people have that thing that they've held on to for some reason, and just it clicks as an opportunity to be able to share it.
Is it common, do you think, that people have something they hang on to that they're not going to wear necessarily anymore or very infrequently?
I think it is pretty common. And I'm not saying that every item of clothing has a memory or mm-hmm. has a story or should be so weighted with meaning. That's not the case. I mean, mm-hmm. we have the things maybe we exercise in and they wear out and we get rid of them or something like that. But I do think that people have something, it tends to be that people have something that just for some reason they can't get rid of. But some of the stories in the book are not even things that people have held on to for a long time. They're newer things, but that something unusual happened while they were wearing them. They were things that weren't supposed to be special items and became special items just because as they were walking out in the world, something crazy happened to them while they were wearing it. It became more special. But I think that people tend to have something more than not.
There is a lot of variety in the stories in the book, but even after I was reading through all of them, I was still surprised to see a story about underpants.
They're actually... Yeah, there are a couple. You might be talking about Mira Zeitlin's story.
She was bit by the dog?
Yeah. So that's a fantastic story. Mira Zeitlin, who is a musician, she had moved to New York in her mid-30s from the West Coast. She was trying to get herself more familiar with the city. She's a runner. She was figuring, well, the way that I'm going to become more familiar with the city is doing something that I did I think in Portland, which was jogging and getting to know the city through that. So she began running in New York, decided she would train for the New York City Marathon because that's such an iconic New York event, was running around Prospect Park in Brooklyn one day, ran by a couple with a dog, suddenly felt this huge force, fell over, realized that she had been bitten by this dog. And the couple runs up and is so sorry. And they say, we live right around here. We'll take you to where we're living and help you, clean up the wound. And as she's walking up to their apartment, she realizes her underwear is slipping off. She's got on shorts. And She realizes that the dog has bitten her underwear and bitten the underwear so hard that it's ripped the elastic. So the underwear comes off in her hand, and she's walking up to this apartment, and she winds up, you know, getting fixed up, and everything winds up being okay. But she has held on to this underwear. Ultimately, she does finish the marathon, and she gets the medal after finishing the marathon. And that was a huge accomplishment and a feeling of getting to know the city. But she says that even more, it was about holding on to the underwear. And that was this even more symbolic gesture of getting to become one with the city in a way, or making the city her home.
It was interesting that the couple said to her they actually knew who she was. They listened to her music and enjoyed it. And they wondered, they said their dog had never done this before, but they wondered if the dog sort of psychically knew.
Right. And that
bite her, because you want to get to know her.
Right. They say that they fell in love. They knew who she was all along because she's this musician, and they fell in love to her first album. But no one revealed any of that initially, because
yeah.
I think obviously they were just so shocked by what had happened. And it only comes out later as they get to know each other. So, she kept this dog ripped underwear. And it's a pretty funny item in the book to see photographed.
It is. They don't look exactly shredded.
No, they just, I mean, the dog just sort of ripped the elastic off of one side. And there is, because I photographed them, there's this big sort of notch where you can see a dog bite.
So strange. Was there a sense that people keep clothes with mostly happy memories? Or not happy is maybe the wrong word, but, you know, with an upbeat ending kind of a memory, I guess.
I think so, but I think that it's not even so much about positive or negative. It's about just something significant, something momentous, something that has a provenance, something that's connected to their family. In my first book, Roseanne Cash tells a story. She's got a huge oversized shirt that was Johnny Cash's, her father's, and you know, the man in black, it's pretty bright silk purple shirt, and it shows this other side of him that people didn't really know, this more private side of him. And she's never really going to wear it, but I think people hold on to things that are layered with meaning, and that could be good or bad.
Yeah, I have an old Dior silk shirt of my grandpa's that I can't wear it anymore because it's too fragile, and I just keep it. I don't know. It's beautiful too. It's beautiful silk, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah, I think that what has happened with worn stories and with worn in New York is because I'll do these writing workshops. I've done them, you know, at MoMA or at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Philadelphia, where people will bring in a garment where they won't be planning to wear it anytime soon. A woman brought in a fur coat, one workshop, and she said, I'm never going to wear this fur coat. It was my mother's. But it was a really big deal for her to purchase this garment. And it's just hanging in my closet, and, it's meaningful, but I'm just never going to wear it. And so what we did was we actually went through and did the writing workshop, and she got down on paper the story. We took a photograph of it, and then I heard from her, and she's like, I felt like I could now actually part with the physical garment because the story has been documented. So I think that the garment is this kind of tangible memory, and frequently, and the reason why I feel like I want to continue to collect these stories is that the stories are there. And as we were talking about at the beginning of the interview, no one has really been asked to share those stories, but there's something almost cathartic about then sharing the story and feeling like perhaps you can then part with the garment. The other thing, too, is that a lot of these stories, if they're never told, they're just lost when the garment is given away. I mean, I have, unfortunately, a few people in both my books who've passed away, and I feel so lucky to have included them in their story before it was gone. So I think that there is something important about documenting and using the clothing to do that. I talk also about at one point to a huge thrift store with some of my students when I was teaching here in Brooklyn, the university at Pratt, and taking them and seeing just so much clothing that was being thrown away or, you know, given away, made into rags that had once been worn by someone mm-hmm. and had a story connected to it, and that was gone. And so, again, as I said, it's not like every garment has to have a story or will have a story, but when they do, they can be really incredible. And I try to capture them before they disappear.
All right. So, listeners, we'd like to capture your stories before they disappear. Is there a piece of clothing you have you can't get rid of? Or maybe you have, but they still it has a story to it. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Emily Spivak. Her new book is entitled Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City. She will be hosting an artist talk at the Columbus College of Art and Design. It's open to the public on March 6th. There's also going to be an event at Book Loft for the book on March 6th as well. So check out the website at wosu.org/allsides for more details. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Fashion comes and goes, but almost everyone has something that they'll never get rid of. They may not wear it, but they'll never let it go. Those are the pieces that say something important about us or a time or a place, and that's what we're talking about today. We'd like to hear your story about that piece, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is best-selling author Emily Spivak. Her latest book is titled Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City. Do you have any pieces of clothing that hold special significance to you, Emily?
I do. I mean, I have quite a few, and that's actually the way that I even got into collecting these stories in the first place. So I would look at my closet, and I'd see an archive of memories and experiences. Whenever I would travel somewhere, one of the first places I might stop would be a flea market to pick up, I don't know, a t-shirt or a dress or something from that location. So I could look through my closet and see those experiences more than I would actually see, oh, this is by this designer, or this is, you know, this cut, this style. And so that was something I was always drawn to. And I started actually writing those stories quite a few years ago, back in 2010. And as I was writing some of my own stories, I realized I was far more interested in other people's stories. But certainly I have my own. One of the stories that's in Worn in New York is about a pair of ripped tights that I wound up wearing to an Easter supper, only to feel very self-conscious about the fact that I was wearing ripped tights. I made biscuits during that supper because I was asked to make something there, felt very, very self-conscious, and wound up serving one of those biscuits to one of my favorite authors ever, Joan Didion, mm-hmm. who wow. once I sat down with her and started talking with her, felt far less ill at ease. But these tights symbolize the discomfort of being at this kind of fancier supper and being around people I didn't really know, and then having this opportunity to do something, such a simple gesture, and sit down with Joan Didion and eat biscuits with her, was just a moment where things kind of fell away. But always had this this awareness of these ripped tights that I was wearing. So, you know, for me, and I think for many of these stories, it's not necessarily always just, say, a dress that someone was married in or something that was handed down, but something where, like, there's just a crazy incident that mm-hmm. happened. I had no idea when I went to this dinner that would happen to me. You know, things where For example, I mean, there's a story in the book from Ben Bostick, who was on the flight that landed, the Sully Sullenberger flight that landed on the Hudson. I mean, it is an incredible story that he shares, and he had no idea when he was getting dressed that morning what was going to happen to him. And the clothes took on this other meaning. He held on to his shoes that he was wearing that day that got completely waterlogged when the flight landed on the Hudson. So there are these events for which we make a selection, make a garment. We select a garment that we will specifically know that we will wear for that occasion. And then there are these moments in our lives where we have no idea what's going to happen. These stories get mapped onto the garment. So I think I sort of walk around thinking about that all the time with my own clothing. And so it's really fun for me to then be able to ask other people to share their stories as well.
I was very touched by Amy Heckerling's story about a pair of shoes. She's a director and writer and producer. I'm reading from your book now. Her work includes the films Clueless and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And she bought a pair of monolobonics. She thought that was the cool pair of shoes to wear, and she wanted to impress people. Talk about what she concluded.
So she was going to the VMA Awards, the Video Music Awards, MTV. This was pre-9/11. She had always had secondhand clothing. She'd always felt a little bit self-conscious about her hand-me-downs. So she figured, okay, I'm going to get these Manolo Blahniks. This is the shoe that people are wearing. This is going to show the world that I am in the know, or that I'm classy, or that I have the means to do this. And she wound up trying to get to the VMAs through a variety of different circumstances. The heel breaks off of her shoe. And so she's hobbling around. She's looking for the person she's trying to meet. She's uncomfortable. And she's like, why am I doing this? Why do I even care about this? And a couple days later, 9/11 happens, and she has even more of a moment, an opportunity to reflect on why she had purchased those shoes and what did they really actually mean and how meaningful were they. And she talks about how she just kind of, it shifted her perspective, and she began to wear shoes that were far more comfortable, and shoes that were a little bit more practical, but also it just sort of helped her figure out more about who she wanted to be, and that she didn't actually need to look to assumptions about what a person is supposed to be like or wear, or status, label, those kinds of things. And I think it just helped her get to know herself better.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have some callers now. Let's turn to them. Kelsey in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kelsey. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say about, I have a boxer brief that I've owned since I was 18. I'm turning 28 in July. I purchased them whenever, you know, I was starting to come out as myself. And I realized how uncomfortable I was in my clothing, so I started changing my clothing habits, dressing differently. And I kind of took the leap one day and asked myself how I would feel about wearing boxer briefs. And so I purchased a cheap 3-pack of Hanes boxer briefs, threw them on, and I never felt better in my whole life. So continued wearing them until they had holes in them, and still to this day I own them, and they're in my dresser just because, you know, they were the first thing that I like. One of the ways that I just felt extremely comfortable with myself.
That's a great story, Kelsey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I also think that what her story, what Kelsey's story is about, is a lot of this, we just do it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be public. And so sometimes we hold on to those things just as a reminder for ourselves, but no one ever may need to know the story. And it's a helpful reminder.
Yeah. Kelsey, thank you so much. Lily in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lily.
Hi. Thank you. I have an evening gown hanging in my closet for almost 35 years. It still has its price tags on it. It was given to me by my mother. It was given to her by her sister. Her sister purchased it in Manhattan for about $40 in the early 1950s. No one has ever worn it. And I find your program very interesting. And since I'm at an age where I would like to give things away, the fur coat story was interesting. I don't know how to find someone who would appreciate the value of this extremely well-made, high-quality fabric garment that's never been worn.
Hmm. What do you think, Emily Spivak?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I'm heading over to CCAD to give a talk, and we'll be speaking with a lot of fashion students in the fashion department. So perhaps there's a way to connect them with this garment, because that seems like something that the students over there would really appreciate, especially because they're learning about the quality of garments and how they're constructed and whatnot. So that might be a place. I also wonder if there's, if they have a collection at CCAD, an archive or something where they would be able to hold on to that garment. Because it does seem like something that you don't want to just, hand over to a thrift store and for that story to be gone, because that's really special. I'm curious why no one's ever worn that garment, too.
Lily, why hasn't anyone ever worn it?
To the best of my knowledge, my aunt purchased it when she was in Manhattan. She didn't end up wearing it, and since she had a very small apartment, she passed it on to my mother, expecting that my mother would wear it, and my mother never had an occasion. By the time I got it, it was a 1950s evening gown that I got in the late 60s. So it was very much out of fashion. And I've just never had an occasion to wear an evening gown. It's more like, it's not floor length, it's more like G length. That's the reason. We just aren't fancy enough to wear it. But I like your suggestion. I think it's still museum quality. It's never been worn. I will contact them. Thank you.
Thanks, Lily. Appreciate that. Let's see. Christy in Grandview Heights, you're on the air. Hi, Christy.
Hi. I wanted to tell a story about a wonderful dress that I own. My daughter and I, we bought it when the family went to New York, probably about 2000, year 2000. And it was about $400 in Bloomingdale's, which is more than we had certainly spent on any dress for her in high school. But we both could fit in it, which was wonderful. So both of us have worn it about time. I tried it on about a month or two ago, and I could fit it into it. It's a black strapless dress. The bodice has lace over it, and it's got like a corset underling in the bodice. But the bottom is a nude skirt with black silk 1-inch strips down. So when you walk or when you dance, all those pieces flow out. And I would wear it, but I need to breathe, so I can't wear it anymore. But I'm saving it. I will never give that dress away. A good friend wore it to a wedding, and I'm saving it. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter that will be able to fit in this someday, and I look forward to her wearing it sometime. But it's a great dress.
Well, that's fantastic.
I love it so much. So, yeah.
It also makes me think about, was it Rita Moreno who wore the dress that she wore to the Oscars in the 60s? She wore it again last night.
Oh, was that? Really? Yes. It was very noticeable. It was such a wow dress.
Yes. So she brought it back to life. And I think that there's this kind of cultural shift, at least I hope. Tiffany Haddish also last night wore a dress to the Oscars that it's this white dress that she's been wearing to all of the different events, the award ceremonies. And she's like, look, I love this dress. Why do I need to keep wearing something new? If I have something that I love. And I really hope that this is symbolic of some kind of shift, because the culture of fashion can be so harsh on the environment that, I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if instead of just looking into our closet and seeing like, oh, I don't have anything to wear. It's like you're compelled to wear something because it has a story connected to it. Or the woman who just called, her granddaughter is more compelled to wear that dress because it has this provenance to it than something new. So I hope, and I feel like we're maybe beginning to see a cultural shift happening.
You know, I read, you know, in the magazine, sometimes they have, you know, women are going to the ceremonies, the award ceremonies in vintage this or vintage that. Is it really old, some of the clothes they're wearing? I mean,
I think it depends. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's older collections from a designer, that have been preserved, and I think that they tend to be vintage. I mean, I think that word also has some ambiguity to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be from the 80s or 90s, or it could be from the 50s or 60s, and that's sort of up to the designer. But I think that there's something great about the sort of upcycling or recycling, that it doesn't have to be something new, and what is more compelling is the story or the past that the garment has had. There's actually a story from in Warren, New York, from the a model Coco Rocha, and she wore a jumpsuit to the Met Gala that had been Elizabeth Taylor's, and she bought it at an auction, and she never thought she would ever be able to get anything that had been once owned by Elizabeth Taylor, who she absolutely adored. And it was this jumpsuit that is bright yellow and pink, and it has this big wine stain on the front of it, and yet she wore it to the Met Gala anyway, and she never had it tailored. So it had like little idiosyncrasies to it. It didn't fit her entirely perfectly because she just kind of wanted to channel Elizabeth Taylor in that dress. And it wasn't a perfect jumpsuit. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't in perfect condition. And that was fine with her. And it had so much more meaning, and she had so much more fun wearing it than some anonymous gown that probably would have looked beautiful on her, but that didn't have a story connected to it.
Christy, thanks for the call. We'll continue our conversation with author Emily Spivak. She will be in Columbus on March 6th. So check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides for more information about that. I can't wait to get to some more of these calls. So keep them coming. 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about clothing and the stories it can tell. Still with us is best-selling author Emily Spivak. Her new book is Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City. She will be in Columbus on March 6th. If you want to learn more about those events, they are both free. Check out the links on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You know, Emily Spivak, I'm thinking about your book and this different stories that I read in it, and there are 68 of them and all, made me think about other things that I wear. And I actually ended up wearing a shirt today because of a story that I read in the book and about a flaw in something that someone wore anyways. And you made me think of it again when you talked about Coco's dress, which, you know, this is not something that was worn by Elizabeth Taylor, but it was worn by my son. And it's just a shirt that he grew out of. He never liked it. He always thought it was too preppy. It's a, Ralph Lauren white Oxford shirt, nothing special about it. And it's got a rust mark on the collar. And that's only I know that that's from a little NPR pin that I had there, and I threw it in the wash and got a rust mark on it. I eventually finally took the pin off, and yeah, there was a rust mark there, and I just, I don't even care. I wear it anyways. So it made me think of that, and I think that I wonder what kind of reaction you've received from friends and people you meet when you're talking about the book, and what kind of how they've reacted to some of the stuff.
Well, what I find is that everyone winds up having a story to share, and that has been so much fun for me with this project. And there, I could probably do another 5 books just about New York when people hear or read the stories that are in this book. It just kind of triggers another story for them, and so. I love these stories because they're these snapshots of a moment in time, and they just are these incredible reflections of who we are right now. And I think the other thing I really like about what the story that you just shared, and many of the stories that I hear from friends and the stories that are in the book, they're about clothes that are not in pristine condition. They are about clothes that are really well loved. And when I would have all the garments, gather them up to then have them photographed, things would show up and they'd be ripped and they'd be stained and they'd be worn and they'd, you know, the soles would be worn down. I think that there's something about we're really, you know, I think we are maybe more drawn to wearing clothes that have some kind of deeper connection than something that is just absolutely pristine. Or we also just wear our clothes hard, but it doesn't mean that we're going to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of it's very different from the assumptions that we have about fashion with a capital F. This is very much about the things that we just wear every day. And so that's another reason why I think that when people hear about the book and hear about the premise, they feel like they can share, because it's something where I'm not talking to people who are just involved in the fashion industry. I mean, there's an astronaut in this book. There's the first female firefighter for the FDNY. There are photographers. There's a guy who owns a bodega. There are people from all over the city. And it's because we all wear clothing, it's something that everyone can participate in.
Deb in Columbus, you're on the air with author Emily Spivak. Hi, Deb.
How you folks doing?
Good.
Hi.
Good.
I was speaking to your screener about 20, 30 years ago. I was going through some old things, getting rid of stuff, and I found a felt identifier, a rectangular shape. I used to bowl in the league in the late 60s, early 70s when I was in school, junior high school. I'm somewhere to Ann's age, only Ann's a little bit younger, of course. And I won't name the name of the place because it's not necessary, but it was in perfect pristine condition, put away, and for some reason this piece of felt with the company's name, because they sponsored us like certain leagues and stuff, I just couldn't get rid of it. It was just so special from my girlhood when I was more innocent. Parents took over, you had reduced headaches, you know.
Yeah.
They were the boss. Another quick story too. My sister, who's a little bit younger than me, but still a little bit younger, it's a bit older than Ann, has a 1977 Columbus area high school prom gown. It was simple, but looked nice for her shape. She became an athlete all through high school and college, and she's still a retired jock, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then she tries it on, and she looks wonderful in it. So it's every now and then she pulls it out. We say, "Now, why are you wearing that thing again?" But she can still wear it, you know, 40 years later.
So yay her.
So just 2 stories I want to tell you.
Thank you, Deb.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I guess I sound sensitive about my age. I'm not. Derek in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Derek.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good.
My story is when I was a broke college art student at CCED back in the 80s, I couldn't afford jeans, and I was able to find an actual decent pair of jeans in the Salvation Army that deteriorated over the 4 years I was in school. And I would patch them with bandanas because it was like the cheapest way to patch a pair of jeans. And they got packed away. And all three of my daughters, as they kind of hit their teen years, discovered them and would wear them. And they passed down through all three of them. And it was always interesting to see something that was kind of like a like a visual representation of my financial status become something that was more of a fashion statement for them.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So they wound up having a completely different life than the one that you had originally intended them for.
Right, Derek?
That was my story. I just wanted to share it with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. Unforeseen success down the road. They sound pretty cool. They sound pretty cool, though.
Right. I mean, it sounds like something I wouldn't mind wearing today.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Lizzie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lizzie.
Hi. Yeah, I love this topic. I was so excited to call in. You're exactly what sprung into my head right away, which is this brown leather jacket that I bought when I was living in Paris. And so the year after I graduated from college, I was teaching English in this high school just outside of Paris. So I was technically living in this crummy little suburb, but I spent as much time in Paris that year as I could. And it was this really important time in my life because, you know, I became really confident in myself. And I felt like that was the year that I grew into myself and kind of became a woman and learned what I was capable of and what my strengths were and felt like, you know, I knew what my path was and I knew who I was. So it was this really important time in my life. And I went home for the summer to upstate New York and went back in the fall to Paris to study at the Sorbonne. And like the first week I was there, I went into this, you know, really common chain store. I think it was called Pimkie, and I fell in love with this leather jacket. And I actually didn't even know that it was leather at the time. So I kind of treated it not very well. And it's got pen stains on it and stuff like that. But as soon as I bought it, I loved it and I wore it all the time. And I just, every time that I put it on now, I'm 30 now. And every time that I put it on now, it doesn't quite fit enough to wear it, right? But it smells, it has that leather smell. And it reminds me of the smell of Paris and, you know, smoking cigarettes and walking around and just feeling like I was the coolest person I was ever going to be. And it just makes me feel so good every single time I wear it. I love it.
I love that story.
Yeah, I love it too. It's incredible how something like that leather jacket can, first of all, have so many sensory elements to it and can actually transport you back to that time in your life in Paris. I find that frequently. There's a story in the first book from Andy Spade, who's a designer, and he talks about the getting this coat from a thrift store and the scent of the cologne, the person who wore it before, kind of emanating out of it a mustiness that sort of was like, who was the owner before this and what was the former life of this garment? But you've kind of instilled that into the leather jacket, which I think is great.
Thank you, Lizzie, for that story. Shirley in Columbiana County?
Columbiana, yes.
Hi.
Yep. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I purchased a blouse set in a local consignment store here.
What do you mean by a blouse set?
It's got like a tank top under it type thing.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So that the sheerness of this gorgeous turquoise and black and sequins blouse doesn't show through. That's why it's two-piece.
Yeah.
The bottom part is turquoise. And I purchased it approximately two, three years ago. And when I looked at the tag, I'm not usually tag conscious, but after this I have been. It was a Bob Mackie wearable art. It says it's got the black tag with the gold lettering. And he was the designer for the stars like Cher and many well-known people that are household names. And I was thrilled out of my mind, and I can assure you I will keep these blouses forever. And it was just a real thrill because I fell in love with the blouses. It's kind of flashy, but I always get lots of compliments on it. And some people I tell my secret, and some people I just secretly.
Oh, I'd always blab it every single time if I were you, but that's just me. But she just loves it. She just loves it, yeah. Emily Spivak.
Yeah, I think that that is, there's something just so much fun about discovering something like that. And there's something really, I have the same experience of when you go into a thrift store and you find something that would have been, a lot more money, or maybe you wouldn't have encountered it because it was, from 15, 20, 30 years ago. Finding that kind of original thing that you can wear and know that no one else is really going to have that. And then it just, when it makes you feel so good like that, I think that that is just, it's really special. And yeah.
Love and to then, find and, something like that at a thrift store too.
Oh yeah. It's, and then all the stories, we don't know what happened and how it wound up there, but hopefully she'll make some other stories that will then be connected to it going forward.
Thank you, Shirley, for that call. Let's see. I have Teresa in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love this conversation. And actually, I have a story that kind of relates to your last caller and Lizzie with the Paris jacket.
Uh-huh.
I have a sweater. A cardigan sweater that I bought at a thrift store when I was in ninth grade, and now 36. And I've kept it with me through all my, boyfriends and breakups and apartments and moves. And it's just kind of my sense of pride whenever I wear it, which is often, especially this time of year, that it's kind of that I've stayed true to who I have been all along, that I encourage involvement and I'm excited, about evolving in my life. But, I still have this a part of me that was a time when I was becoming the person that I am today. And the sweater has been mended and I change the buttons on it often. And,
oh, cool.
It gets a lot of wear and tear. And when I was a freshman in high school and I first got it and I wore it, 24/7. I got an orange paint stain on it that I always kind of loved that it had. And recently in the last 2 years or so, after all the washings, like the little last bit of orange paint that was left on it is gone. And it kind of broke my heart to see it go because it's been on there all the time. And I would, when I was like standing in line or something, I would rub this last little patch of rubbery orange paint that was left on it, so it's kind of sad.
It's interesting that you mention that, though, because that little rust mark on my collar from the NPR pin is fading now, and I kind of thought, oh, yeah. I was bummed when it happened, but now it's like, oh crap,
stains are points of pride, and they show that you've kind of walked through the world and experienced it, and made your mark in it, and yeah. It is kind of sad. It's the inverse of what we ever think that we want these clothes that are untouched. But I like when they have those kinds of markings on them.
Teresa, thank you so much. And Carolyn in Clintonville, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Well, I've been fascinated with this program, and I just wanted to quickly say that 50 years ago, I bought a dress that I wore to my college graduation, and I'd always kept it. When my granddaughters would visit from North Carolina, they loved to try clothing that I still had. And 3 years ago, Lily said, "May I wear your dress to my high school graduation?" I said, "Of course." And then, amazingly enough, her sister wore that same dress last spring.
That's so cool.
Graduation. So I have pictures of us. My granddaughter is wearing that same dress, and I am thrilled they wanted to do that.
Carolyn, thank you so much. I don't want to cut you off, but we're out of time. Carolyn, thank you so much for that story. Emily Spivak, thanks for joining the show today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Emily Spivak is the author of the book Worn in New York, 68 Sartorial Memoirs of the City, and also the book Worn Stories. She will be in Columbus on March 6th. For more information about both of those events, both of which are free, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for all the great stories. This is All Sides with Am Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.